My name is John Erling. Today's date is May 24th, 2010. Doctor, if you will state your name, your date of birth, and your present age.
My name is Dr. C. Thomas Thompson. I was born February 2nd, 1925. I'm currently 85 years old.
Where are we recording this interview?
In my home office, which is called Suite 200, which is basically my room above the garage.
Let's talk about your mother, your mother's name, maiden name, where she came from.
My mother was Margaret Johnson. She was born in 1895. She was from Brookhaven, Mississippi. She died at age 95.
And what was she like? What kind of a person?
A marvelous person. She was a little short lady. She confessed to my wife, Anna, one time that she'd always said she was 5 feet tall, and she whispered, but really I'm only 4'11". She was a very spunky little lady and was a teacher, as was my father. I had twin sisters who were 2 years older than me. But my mother was a very remarkable lady, only person I know that read newspapers from end to end, and she never forgot the continued pages. If you ever see her with a Times-Picayune from New Orleans turning the page, she would read the first page, then the second page, then the third page. Kept them all straight and knew everything about everything. Remarkable lady.
And your father's name?
My father's name was Clarence Tatman Thompson. We have a tradition of CTs. He was delivered by his old buggy-riding doctor uncle in Bayou Chico, Louisiana. And they told him the name, and he said, "No kid ought to have to carry that name around. Therefore, I'm going to call him Dick." And my father was known as Dick Thompson all of his life.
But his real name was, again?
Clarence Tatman Thompson. Nobody could ever find him because he was always in the telephone book the wrong way.
So what did your father do for a living?
He was a teacher and was principal of the school in the little village I was brought up in, Estherwood, Louisiana.
And then your mother?
Was a teacher. I was the only escapee. My two sisters were teachers, and they both married teachers.
Your sisters were older than you?
2 years older. They were twins.
And twins. So there were three of you in that family.
Right.
What was the first house you remember in your village and some of the memories going way back then?
Well, you'd have to understand, Estherwood, Louisiana was in Cajun country, deep south Louisiana, right above the marshes.
How do you spell that?
Estherwood.
Estherwood.
Estherwood. It was, you know, just a village. The only saving grace was Highway 90, which the old Spanish trail went through. It was a U.S. highway. So a lot of traffic through it. We had one gas station and one store, one cafe, one of everything. No stoplights. It was a rice farming part of the country. Since then, they've found oil, but when I was growing up, that wasn't true.
What would you do as a child, as a teen, on into the 30s? What did you do for entertainment?
Well, that's very interesting because everything centered around the school. If you had a basketball game, you went to the basketball game, or if the band played, or everything centered around the school. This is a kind of an interesting part of the country. My father would hold his teachers' meeting in the local saloon, because this was French Louisiana, and that was not considered abnormal. So I can remember the early days along that line. The school was so small that we were a Class D school, which were high schools under 100. So we had about 60 kids in the whole high school. But it was a school that went from first grade through the 11th. That's all we had.
You said it was French Louisiana. Did you speak
Cajun
French?
French. Yeah, un peu. Je demeure à Louisiane du Sud à peu près 18 ans.
So as a child, you would pick up on the French.
Well, as a child, in school even, we went to school in English and played in French. I could play a whole baseball game in French. Arrêtez la plot. That's because the kids all came from French-speaking families, and virtually all of them.
But in your home, you spoke English.
Yeah, well, my parents were the teachers. They were considered the professional learned class. Both of them had master's degrees. As a kid, we would go to LSU during the summers as they worked on their master's degrees. Yeah. During the Depression, I was a growing kid during the Depression. they had a hard time getting paid because all the school boards were broke and all the parishes in Louisiana were broke. They were paid in scrip for sometimes 2-3 years in a row.
Explain scrip. What scrip meant.
It's like funny money. Some merchants would take it, some wouldn't. It was like an IOU. This occurred all over the country to some extent because schools were broke.
So the Depression from 1929 on in there, do you recall that it impacted your family much?
Well, yes and no. I didn't know I was poor till I went to college. But my parents both had jobs, though they didn't make much money. Gosh, when I started college, I think my dad as a principal made $150 a month. My mother made about $100, but went away to school. Found out, my gosh, other people didn't have money too, you know.
But you always had meals on the table.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He had a job. Most of the problems related to people, and I think about today's world, there's so many people without jobs, and of course along came the WPA and the PWA and the CCC and all of the Roosevelt anti-depression moves. It was significant, the amount of poverty that there was, but it was so universal. There was a railroad that went through our town, so we had hobos. People who brought up during the Depression remember hobos. They'd just jump off the train and circle around and ask for food. We never turned them down. That was part of our culture at that time.
Weren't some of them kind of likable characters?
Oh, yeah. I learned a lot from them because, you know, they'd sit there on the back steps. And I'd sit there with my dog and we'd talk about where he'd been. I thought it sounded pretty romantic myself.
Did some of them come through on a regular basis?
No. I don't think I ever saw one twice. And I always thought they had some way of identifying houses because they would skip other people and come to our house. My parents told me always feed them. I can't imagine a hobo enjoying a peanut butter sandwich, but if I was there alone or my sisters were there, we'd give them food.
Then in the 30s, did you go to movies?
You know, the nearest town that had a movie house was 6 miles away, and it was a big deal to go to a movie. Occasionally, little tent shows would come to town, and they would stay a week, and they would have a cowboy show and then a serial, a mad scientist or something of that sort, and that was always a big deal.
Songs of the 30s, you would have been 10 years old and 35.
This was the big swing band, the big band area. I can remember when we bought our family radio, it's hard to believe, which was always a big piece of furniture. We'd listen to the radio, and we could hear two stations. There was one in Cincinnati.
WLW?
WLW in Cincinnati, and the Del Rio, Texas station, which was right across the border in Mexico. It was the most powerful station. That was the guy that did goat gland implants for what we would now call erectile dysfunction. This is a big deal. So you could always hear the Del Rio station, and WLW was the big deal.
Yeah.
The entertainment was largely local. There would be functions every Saturday night that our local patrons called the fado-dos, which were French dances, basically. And they would have a little, we called them chinky-chinky bands with the fiddle players and stuff and dance. They would usually break up with some knife fight or something of that sort. That was part of the tradition. We were always warned by my dad, as soon as the knife fight starts breaking out, you come home.
Do you remember listening to FDR?
Fireside Chats. Yes, I do.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Would your family gather around the radio and listen to his fireside chat?
Absolutely, because remember that these were preliminary years leading up to war. And there was a sense of knowledge that we were going to go to war. It's kind of crazy. My dad had been in World War I and wounded. And he said, well, we're going to have to fight again. I don't know that my schoolmates kept up with it as much. I was fascinated by the notion that we were going to prepare for war. And, of course, it came.